ghosts and evil spirits mentioned in our scriptures refer to? Demons and demonesses. I don't know if they do here in Mauritius, in those places, they even give a name to the cyclones, and they are usually female names.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Oisin.
Good for you. What? No. All these, you know, confusing and destroying things are all. There is the eye which is nothing. But somehow this eye is able to gather this whirlwind around it. And the whirlwind was also there, or the wind was there. But on account of this fictitious coming into being of the I, the self-arrogatingness of the ego sense, a personality is formed. From there on, a motivation arises. This personality gives rise to a motivation. Yes? When the wind blew, there is nothing. There is no... It was calm, it was gentle, it was a bit violent, gale force, nothing. Nothing serious. But now that there is a fictitious eye, the eye of the hurricane, the same wind which is there assumes a personality, whirls round that eye. This thing whirls round that eye. It doesn't go about doing its normal job. It does an abnormal job. Around a piece of nothing. Now we take leave. We'll conclude this analogy. Till, somehow or other, the pressure in the eye of the cyclone or the hurricane is lost, and then wind remains wind. The wind is not destroyed. Wind remains wind, space remains space. Nothing has happened. You look around and see what was there yesterday? The same wind. The same space, the same elements. What was assumed to be the eye of the hurricane is gone. What went, what disappeared, what dissipated, just the idea that there was a terrible thing. Only that went. The wind has not been destroyed, it's still there. The space has not been destroyed, it's still there. Everything is still there. But somehow mysteriously the whole thing dissipated. That is called moksha. Let's shift the analogy again. This self-arrogatingness of the ego, which arises between the ego sense as the begging bowl and the cosmic intelligence, which alone is the experiencer of all experiences, in between this peculiar self-arrogatingness springs up. When this self-arrogatingness springs up, the same intelligence which is around it, which we call the mind, the intelligence which operates around this ego sense, which enables the experience of those particular experiences to take place. Is that clear? No. Earth, water, fire, air, space, They're all there everywhere. And intelligence is also cosmic. And therefore, each particle of that intelligence, each atom of that intelligence is in also contact with all these natural forces. Jiva bhutam mahabaho tehedam dhadite jagat. That is, the inner experiencer of those eight components of outer nature. The inner nature is the jiva, is a living soul. The living soul. What is soul? Don't imagine as we do in the evening as sort of a flame coming up and down. The soul is nothing but a cell in the cosmic being. And there are infinite number of these cells, countless infinite number of these cells throughout the universe. And this coming together of the outer nature of this cosmic being, which is material, and the inner nature of this cosmic being, which is the cell, happens in infinite number of points, if one can visualize them to be such. Each cell becomes the experiencer, and that cell is surrounded, as it were, by this material nature, which becomes its own experience, object of experience, whirling and whirling and whirling, whirling in billions of places. As this inner experiencer, which is the soul, which is the cell of the cosmic being, non-different from the cosmic being, non-different from cosmic consciousness, which alone is the experiencer of all experiences, is in constant contact with its own outer nature, which is considered matter, described as matter. Why is it described as matter? Because we describe it as matter. Why creates mischief? This cell in the cosmic being, which is called the soul, which is the inner nature, jiva bhuta mahabahu yedam dharite jagat, it is this cell in the cosmic body of God or the cosmic consciousness, it is this that experiences all experiences, being consciousness, being intelligence. And yet mysteriously the ego sense says, I experience. When thus a self-arrogatingness of the ego sense appears, it creates a little whirlwind around itself. If you transpose another analogy here, that whirlwind plus this ego sense in the middle, in the center, the eye of the hurricane, is like a computer. Not merely like a hurricane, but like a computer. He said a tornado sometimes lifts all these cars and houses and the things, people up. But probably it's only for a little while, and that may not be an adequate analogy. This thing is like a computer. The mind, the individualized mind, the individualized intelligence, the habit of the ego sins. The habit of the self-arrogatingness of the ego sins becomes a computer. The center is still empty. Please, that's terribly important to remember. We should never forget that. The center, the eye of the cyclone is still pure emptiness. There is nothing in it. Unfortunately, it has come into being. The self-arrogatingness of the ego sins has unfortunately come into being. How it came into being, we don't know. But around this, around that is the whirling wind, which is like a computer. And the computer, as it continues to whirl, gathers data. All the experiences which would otherwise have merely passed through. If you look at these trees, that's what they teach you. Summer comes, fall, winter, spring. All these experiences pass through them without leaving any mark. But you and I are constantly worried. Sometimes happy, elated, oh, look at there, things growing on my hair, on top of my head. Oh, yeah, charming. And then suddenly all these things fall away. It is false, nothing to be worried about. But then I am worried about it. Falling. That is the self-arrogatingness of the ego sins. The computer is gathering data and preserving them, recording them, preserving them. That is known as citta. Funny enough, Krishna doesn't use that word in that particular context because it's not there. This citta is born of a confusion. The self-arrogating principle regards a certain field of consciousness, intelligence around it as its own private property. Whereas no such thing really exists. There is nothing called my mind. There is nothing called my intelligence. The my itself being like the eye of the cyclone, non-existent. There is no such thing called my mind. This my mind is merely a limitation, a vasana, that was born of the foolish assumption of the self-arrogating principle, which can be called ego. I, and therefore this is my mind. The I itself being empty, how can there be something called my? If the I is realized, seen to be empty, it's obvious there can be no my. There's a beautiful analogy used in most scriptures. A barren woman's son. And if we are talking about which girl the barren woman's son is going to get married to, it's an absurd thing right from the beginning. We have not inquired into the reality of the I. The eye of the cyclone, the eye of the hurricane, the eye of the tornado. Because we see the tornado as an existing principle, fact of existence, we assume that to be a fact, and therefore we assume that it has an eye, and we speak about the eye. Thereby, giving, perpetuating a myth, a fiction. When the I itself is absent, how does the I then acquire a thing called my mind? This my mind is the citta. Once this is assumed, that is comparable to a computer. It goes on gathering, whereas otherwise these experiences would come and go. There is a momentary experience which the soul, jiva, experiences, which in other words, it is the cosmic consciousness experiences, the experience, like the tree experiencing. And a moment's delight comes and it is gone. A moment's pain comes, it is gone. But this computer registers all that in memory, memory banks. That is called karma. This computer registering all these experiences and expressions. The computer does not make a distinction at all between what is fed into it and what it spews out. It's the same as far as it is concerned. It is passing through those nerves. Whether it passes this way or that way, it doesn't matter. Both these are recorded in this computer called the citta. And the citta becomes loaded and loaded and loaded, being loaded, becomes grosser and grosser and grosser, heavier. And then it acquires an almost real personality. Why is it so? Because the computer has been loaded so heavily with all these memories. Every time you do something, the computer is loaded with an impression. Every time you experience something, the computer is loaded with the name, the vasana, the samskaras. And every time the samskara or the habit or the tendency is expressed, it cuts a deeper groove in that computer. And this citta, therefore, it is the citta, therefore, that continues to operate as a personality, gathering around itself matter suited to its own functioning. Matter in the sense of earth, water, fire, flesh, bones, cheek, eyes, nose, hair. All these things are acquired, assembled by the computer to suit its own experiences and expressions. Because once the computer has been fed with all these, it craves for repetition, it craves for expression. This is not a computer which functions only when you switch it on, the switch is constantly on. So what has been fed into it is coming out all the time as expression. And this is a living computer. And in order to enable it to live and to function, to continue to function as an individual, it lives acquiring newer bodies. It is this that takes birth again and again and again. It leaves one body. When that body is considered by the computer to be useless to itself, and jumps into another office. That's the only difference between you are the ordinary computer and this computer. When this computer thinks that this body is too old, I can't experience anymore. Through this body, it jumps out of it, goes looks for another one. It creates its own environment. It creates its own office. These actions, which are fed into the computer, these experiences which are fed into the computer, later produce their own reaction. It is usual to say, as you sow, so you reap. There also is a little bit of difficulty. It's not so simple as that. When you plant a certain seed in the garden, that particular seed gives out a certain shoot. It may not be all that simple in the case of the chitta, because this chitta is conscious, it is full of energy, it's churning and churning and churning all the time. And as and when a new experience is fed into it, a new data is fed into it, the churning assimilates it. So that, for instance, those of you who have studied English grammar, etc., with Hershey, it's always fresh. Most of you who have studied English grammar, you may not be able to remember all the rules that you learnt at school, but you know English. You speak well. That is, all those rules have become integrated within you as knowledge, as the knowledge of the language. You don't know why you use a certain word in a certain sentence, but you use it. That is, the knowledge has become, the particular rules have become integrated in a whole knowledge. That is what creates a personality. And this personality continues to live. What we loosely say, birth after birth, it is not as though it takes birth after birth. That, in other words, it dies again and again. It doesn't die at all. So, if someone asks you, do you believe that there is life after death, you can boldly say, no. I don't believe that there is life after death. I believe I don't die at all. It's different. I don't die at all. Or this personality does not die, does not disintegrate, does not die, does not perish. The body is discarded, thrown away, but this computer goes looking for another set of molecules with which to build another house for itself, another office for itself, in which it can express and experience whatever it needs to experience, whatever it needs to express. All the actions or the subtle impressions of the actions or the subtle residue of the actions that are thus stored in the computer are called sanchita.
You are going to get detail now.
Sanchita literally means collection all the experiences, all the actions that have been fed into the computer called the chitta, they form the collection, the sanchita. And this collection of actions and experiences goes looking for a suitable environment in which the reactions of those actions can be effectively worked out. Once this choice has been made, the effects of that choice, the sequence of that choice, the consequences of that choice have to be endured, carried out, become inevitable. That becomes prarabdha. Prarabdha means I have decided, or yes, the chitta has decided that this must be done, and this must be endured, and therefore this body has been entered into. That which has been, which is allotted to this incarnation, as it were, to this birth, has to be gone through, whether you like it or not. The computer is able to attract to itself those conditions and those events and those happenings which are conducive to its present life. And that is prarabdha. No one can stop its functioning. The last is agami, that is what we are doing at present. This is the present or forward looking karma. Prarabdha is what has already begun to fructify, and sanchita is the storehouse. Sanchita is an enormous thing, isn't it? We really don't know how much there is in it. Prarabdha is just that little part which has become operative now, in this birth. And agami is what we are doing now, what is being fed into the computer for future reference, for future torture. Akashic records, or do they refer to it as a sort of personalized affair, or just general Akashic records? General. This is your own.
Is there a collective?
This is your own collection.
No,
there is no collective sanchita. No. Akashic records probably. Telephone.
They have
some theories like that, but it's not very sensible. Akashic records are sort of, you know, cosmic consciousness. It may not refer to any particularized, individualized karma. Akashic records are like, for instance, they say that the actual words and sound of the teachings of Jesus and Buddha, they're all there. That's the type of thing.
So once this choice has been made, then the sequence
must continue, yeah.
Is this choice always made in corresponding time to this physical birth, or is it sometimes?
No one knows. That no one knows. That is why, it is because we don't, no one knows all that, they do not really suggest that you and I, or your chitta, or my chitta, really chose to be what we are now. That was determined by some kind of cosmic intelligence, a god or some kind. Because otherwise it seems illogical that people would choose to, you know, put themselves in situations in which they would suffer, born blind. Why must I choose to be blind at birth? But that also doesn't make much sense. There are lots of loose ends in this. Lots and lots of loose ends. Why is it so? Because we have assumed something which is totally illogical, totally improbable. Is there an I? And if the ego sense itself is a mistake, an assumption, a false assumption, then all these things seem to have no meaning at all. When a squirrel eats a leaf or a foliage, the tree doesn't cry and weep and so on. Because it's pure consciousness. There's no self-arrogatingness in the ego sense in it, of the ego sense in it. Looks like it. I mean, it doesn't come and tell you, I'm standing. You do.
Why do you say it has ego sense?
Because it seems to have a certain personality. It's able to draw certain things from the earth and the surrounding atmosphere. It's able to grow into that and not other.
So it's not the same kind of ego as
it? Right.
Without the self-arrogatingness.
That's it. That's the distinction we are making. Because I quoted the Bhagavad Gita to begin with, where ahankara, or the ego sense, is regarded as an existential reality, the bowl.